Delinar said. The hands seem human, if too long, but the rest of it...
I have no idea, Mella said. She glanced away and shivered. It's not human, sir. I don't know what it is.
In the back of Dalinar's mind, the Stormfather rumbled.
This, the Spren said. This is not possible.
What? Dalinar asked.
This is a cryptic, he said. The Lightweaver Spren. Only they don't have bodies in this realm. They can't.
Sir,
Lynn said from a nearby slab. The corpse she'd uncovered was a pile of vines vaguely shaped like a person.
Cultivation, Spren, the Stormfather said. Return to that first body you saw. Now!
Dalinar did not object and walked toward the front of the pavilion. What he'd first dismissed as an ordinary body now seemed anything but. The white-blue hair, the pieces of clothing that were, he now recognized, the exact same color as the body. The Stormfather's thunder grew distant.
I knew him, the Stormfather said. I could not see it at first. I did not want to see it. This is Vespin, Honor Spren.
So they're not some kind of attempt at making men into mimicries of Spren, Dalinar said. These are actual Spren corpses.
Spren don't have corpses, the Stormfather said. Spren do not die like men. They are power that cannot be destroyed. This is impossible!
Dalinar searched through the chamber where more and more drawn-back sheets revealed different strange corpses. Several, just skeletons, others, piles of rock.
This place is evil, the Stormfather said. Beyond evil. What has been done here is an abomination.
Sigsel jogged over, holding some ledgers he'd found in the rear. Dalinar couldn't make sense of them, but Sigsel pointed at the Azish glyphs, reading them.
This is a list of experiments, I think, the company lord said. The first column is the name of a Spren, the second column a date, the third is a time. Maybe how long they lived? None seem to have survived longer than a few minutes.
Blood of my fathers, Dalinar said, his hands trembling. And this last column?
Notes, sir, Sigsel said. Here, the last entry. Our first Honor Spren lived nearly 15 minutes. A new record, and orders of magnitude longer than all previous attempts. Honor Spren seem to have the most human-like essences. When transferred, the organs and muscles form most naturally. We must capture more of them.
Cryptics and Ash Spren are impossible to bring over properly with our current knowledge. The process of creating bodies for them results in a physical form that collapses upon itself immediately. It appears their physiology works against the fundamental laws of the physical realm.
Storms, Layton said, running a hand through his short hair. What does it mean?
Leave this place immediately, the Stormfather said. We must warn my children.
Agreed, Dalinar said. Grab anything you think might be useful, and meet me outside. We're leaving.
Moash fled the tower, using lashing after lashing as he felt the structure rumble, felt it come alive, felt light begin to surround him. Her light, the Queen's light, and before that, a terrible sound. It had pushed away his connection to Odium, forcing Moash to feel pain for the things he'd done, pain he didn't want, pain he'd given away. That pain seethed and spread inside him. He'd killed Teft. He'd killed Teft! Get out, get out, get out, he thought as he tore through a hallway, uncaring whether he hit people with his shard blade as he passed over their heads. He needed it ready, in case Kaladin found him, in case he hadn't broken. The walls were glowing and the light seemed brighter to Moash than it should have. He wasn't supposed to feel afraid. He'd given that away. He couldn't be the man he needed to be if he was afraid, or...
The pain, the shame, the anger at himself was worse than the fear. Get out. Go. Go! The suffocating light surrounded him, burned him as he burst out the front gates of the tower. He felt more than saw what happened behind. Each level of the tower came alive one at a time. The air warped with sudden warmth and pressure. So much light. So much light. Moash lashed himself into the sky, darting out away from the tower. Soon after, however, he slammed into a hard surface. He dropped into something soft but cold, pained as his stormlight kept him alive, barely. It ran out before it could fully heal him, so he lay there in the cold, waiting for the numbness. He wasn't supposed to have to feel anymore. That was what he'd been promised. He couldn't blink. He didn't seem to have eyelids anymore. He couldn't see, either. His vision had been burned away. He listened to distant cheers, distant sounds of exultation and joy as he lay in the cold on the mountainside. The snow numbed his skin, but not his soul. Not his wretched soul. Teft, I... He couldn't say it. The words wouldn't form. He wasn't sorry for what he'd done. He was only sorry for how his actions made him feel. He didn't want this pain. He deserved it, yes, but he didn't want it. He should have died, but they found him. A few heavenly ones who had been in the air when the tower was restored. They'd awoken, it seemed, after falling from the sky and leaving the tower's protections. They gave him stormlight, then lifted him, carrying him away. Odium's gift returned, and Moash breathed easier, blissfully without his guilt. His spine healed. He could walk by the time they dropped him among a camp of a few others who had managed to flee the tower. But he couldn't see them. No matter how much stormlight he was given, his eyes didn't recover. He was blind. 112. Terms.
Roshar will be united in its service of the greater war.
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days. Exhausted and confused, Dalinar and the Windrunners eventually landed back at their Amuli war camp mere minutes before a high storm was scheduled to arrive. He felt the weight of failure pulling him down, strong as gravity. He sagged as he dismissed the Windrunners to go rest. He'd gone all that way for nothing. He was no closer to understanding his powers, no closer to doing something about the capture of Urethiru, no closer to rescuing Navani. He probably should have gone to Yasna to explain what they'd found, but he was so tired. He plodded through the camp, towing his failure like a cart behind him, populated by swirling exhaustion spren. And that was when they found him, women running up with spanreeds to the tower that were suddenly working again. Messengers surrounded by glory spren, bringing amazing news. Navani in contact, the tower and oath gates functioning. Dalinar listened to it in a daze. Good news. Finally, good news. He wanted to immediately get flown to Azamir so he could go see Navani, but he recognized the foolishness in that. He needed at least a short rest before enduring another lengthy flight, and there was that imminent high storm to worry about. He ordered a message sent to his wife, promising to come to her before the day was out. Then he asked Yasna and the Prime if he could meet with them after the storm. After that, they left him to at last approach the small building he made his base. It felt like coming home. Of course, he'd lived enough of his life out on campaign that home had acquired a loose definition. Any place with a soft bed usually counted.
Urethiru really is safe now, Dalinar, the Stormfather said in his mind. I was so distracted by the dead spren that I didn't notice at first. The sibling has fully awakened. Another bondsmith? The implications of this.
Dalinar was still trying to deal with those himself. Navani bonding a Spren? That was wonderful. But he was so emotionally worn at the moment, he just wanted to sit and think. He pushed open the door to his house, stumbled through, and entered a vast golden field. The ground shimmered as if infused with stormlight. Dalinar pulled to a halt and turned around. The doorway was gone, the doorknob having vanished from his hand. The sky was a deep reddish orange, like a sunset. He was in a vision, but he hadn't heard the high storm hit. And no, this wasn't a high storm vision. This was something else. He turned with trepidation, looking across the glimmering field to where a figure, clad in golden robes, stood on a nearby hilltop facing away from Dalinar and staring out at the horizon. Odium. Storms within, Dalinar thought, flagging. Not now. I can't face him right now. Well, a soldier couldn't always pick his battlefield. This was the first time Odium had appeared to him in a year. Dalinar needed to use this. He took a deep breath and pushed through his fatigue. He hiked up the hillside and eventually stopped beside the figure in gold. Odium held a small scepter, like a cane, his hand resting on the ball at the top. He appeared different from when Dalinar had last seen him. He still resembled a wise old man with a gray beard cut to medium length, a paternal air, sagacious, knowing, understanding. Only now his skin was glowing in places, as if it had grown thin and a light inside was seeking to escape. The god's eyes had gone completely golden, as if they were chunks of metal set into a statue's face. When Odium spoke, there was a harsh edge to his tone, his words clipped, barely holding in his anger.
"Our connection grows, Dalinar," Odium said, "stronger by the day. I can reach you now as if you were one of my own. You should be." "I will ever and always be my own," Dalinar said. "I know you went to see Ishar. What did he tell you?"
Dalinar clasped his hands behind him and used the old commander's trick of remaining silent and staring in thought. Stiff back, strong posture, outwardly in control even if you're one step from collapsing.
"You were supposed to be my champion, Dalinar," Odium said. "Now I see how you resisted me. You've been working with Ishar all along, haven't you? Is that how you learned to bind the realms?"
"You find it inconvenient, don't you," Dalinar said, "that you cannot see my future. How does it feel to be human, Odium?"
"You think I fear humanity," Odium said. "Humanity is mine, Dalinar. All emotions belong to me. This land, this realm, this people, they live for me. They always have. They always will."
"And yet you come to me," Dalinar thought, "to berate me? You stayed away all these months. Why now?" The answer struck him like the light of a rising sun. Odium had lost the tower. Urethiru was safe, and there was another bondsmith. He'd failed again, and now he thought Dalinar had been working with Ishar. Cultivation's gift, though it had bled Dalinar, had given him the strength to defy Odium. All this time he'd been asking what a god could possibly fear, but the answer was obvious. Odium feared men who would not obey him. He feared Dalinar.
"Ishar told me some curious things this latest visit," Dalinar said. "He gave me a book with secrets in it. He is not as mad as I feared, Odium. He showed me my connection to you and explained how limited you are. Then he proved to me that a bondsmith unchained is capable of incredible feats."
He looked at the ancient being.
You are a god. You hold vast powers, yet they bind you as much as they free you. Tell me, what do you think of a human bearing the weight of a god's powers but without that god's restrictions?
The power will bind you eventually, as it has me, Odium said. You don't understand a fraction of the things you pretend to, Dalinar.
Yet you're afraid of me, Dalinar thought, of the idea that I might fully come into my power, that you're losing control of your plans. Perhaps Dalinar's errand to Tukar hadn't been a failure. He hadn't gained Ishar's wisdom, but so long as Odium thought he had...
Bless you, Renarin, Dalinar thought, for making my life unpredictable to this being, for letting me bluff.
We made an agreement, Odium said. A contest of champions. We never set terms.
I have terms, Dalinar said, on my desk. A single sheet of paper.
Odium waved his hand, and the words began appearing, written as if in glowing golden ink in the sky before them. Enormous, intimidating.
You didn't write this, Odium said, his eyes narrowing. Nor did that else caller.
The light grew more vibrant beneath Odium's skin, and Dalinar could feel its heat, like that of a sun rising, making his skin burn. Anger, deep anger, white hot. It was consuming Odium. His control was slipping.
Sephandrius, Odium spat. Ever the rat. No matter where I go, there he is, scratching in the wall, burrowing into my strongholds. He could have been a god. Yet he insists on living in the dirt.
Do you accept these terms? Dalinar asked.
By this, if my champion wins, Odium said, then Roshar is mine, completely and utterly. And if yours wins, I withdraw for a millennium.
Yes. But what if you break your word? You've delayed longer than you should have. What if you refuse to send a champion?
I cannot break my word, Odium said, the heat increasing. I basically am incapable of it.
Basically? Dalinar pressed.
What happens, Odium, if you break your word?
Then the contract is void and I'm in your power. Same but reversed if you break the contract. You would be in my power and the restrictions honor placed upon me, chaining me to the Rosharan system and preventing me from using my powers on most individuals would be void.
But that is not going to happen, and I am not going to break my word.
Because if I did, it would create a hole in my soul, which would let cultivation kill me. I am no fool. And you are a man of honor. We will both approach this contest in good faith, Dalinar. This isn't some deal with a voidbringer from your myths, where one tricks the other with some silly twist of language. A willing champion from each of us and a fight to the death. They will meet on the top of Urethiru. No tricks, no lies.
Very well, Dalinar said. But as the terms state, if your champion is defeated, it isn't only you who must withdraw for 1,000 years. The fused must go with you, locked away again, as well as the spren that make regals. No more forms of power. No more void spren.
The light pulsed inside Odium, and he turned his eyes back toward the horizon.
I cannot agree to this.
The terms are simple, Dalinar said. If you...
I said I cannot agree, Odium said. The Everstorm has changed everything, and Sephandrius should have realized this. Singers cannot adopt regal forms powered by the Everstorm. The fused are free now. They can be reborn without my intervention. The Oath Pact could have imprisoned them, but it is now defunct. I am literally unable to do as you ask, not without destroying myself in the process.
Then we cannot have an accommodation, Dalinar said, because I'm certainly not going to agree to anything less.
And if I agree to less?
Dalinar frowned, uncertain, his mind muddled from fatigue. The creature was going to try to trick him, he was certain of it. So he did what he thought best. He said nothing. Odium chuckled softly, rotating his scepter beneath his hand so the butt ground against the golden stone at their feet.
Do you know why I make men fight, Dalinar? Why I created the thrill? Why I encourage the wars?
To destroy us.
Why would I want to destroy you? I am your god, Dalinar.
Odium shook his head, staring into the infinite golden distance.
I need soldiers for the true battle that is coming, not for one people or one miserable windswept continent. A battle of the gods, a battle for everything. Rashar is a training ground. The time will come that I unleash you upon the others who are not nearly as well trained, not nearly as hardened as I have made you.
Curious, Dalinar said. I don't know if you've noticed, but your hardening tactic has resulted in fused or going mad from the stress.
The light grew stronger inside Odium, seeming as if it might explode from his skin.
If your champion wins, I will step away for 1,000 years, he said. I will retreat to Braze, and I will no longer speak to, contact, or influence the fused or void spren. But I cannot contain them, and you will have to pray that your descendants are as lucky as you are, as I will be less lenient when I return.
Dalinar started to speak, but Odium interrupted.
Let me finish, he said. In exchange for you giving up one thing you wanted, I will give up one in turn. If I win, I will give up my grand plans for Roshar. I will leave this planet for 1,000 years and abandon all I've worked for here. I give you and the Singers freedom to make your own peace. Freedom for you? And freedom for me. This is all I ask for my victory. As you represent honor, you can relax his prohibitions on me. No matter what happens in the contest, you never have to worry about me again. All I want is away from this miserable system.
Of course it wouldn't be as easy as Wit had promised. Dalinar wavered. Wit looked out for himself as he'd always said he would. The contract reinforced that idea. Odium offered a different, tempting prospect. To be rid of him. To fight this war as an ordinary war. Two forces pulled at him. Which did he trust? He doubted that any mortal, Jasnah included, could construct a contract good enough to hold a god. But to simply give Wit what he desired? Who do you trust more, Wit or the God of Anger? It wasn't really in question. He didn't trust Wit much, but he didn't trust Odium at all. Besides, if Honor had died to trap this god here on Roshar, Dalinar had to believe the Almighty had done so for good reason. So he turned to go.
Send me back, Odium, Dalinar said. There will be no agreement today.
A flare of heat washed over him from behind. Dalinar spun, finding Odium glowing with a bright red-gold light, his eyes wide, his teeth clenched.
Stand firm, Dalinar thought to himself. Wit says he can't hurt you, not without breaking his word, not without inviting his own death.
Wit hadn't included that last part, but Dalinar stood his ground, sweating, his heart racing. Until at last the power abated,
the heat and light retreating.
I would prefer, Odium said, to make an agreement.
Why so eager? Dalinar thought. It's the power, isn't it? It's ripping you apart for delaying. It wants out.
I've offered you an agreement, Dalinar said. I've told you that I cannot keep to these terms. I can seal myself away, but not my minions. I can demand that the fused and the unmade retreat, but not all currently obey my will. And I can do nothing about the regals.
Dalinar took a deep breath.
Fine, he said, but I cannot entertain an agreement that frees you from this world. So we should focus on our conflict, you and me. If I win, you are exiled to damnation and withdraw from the conflict entirely. If you win, I will go into exile and my people will have to fight without my aid. You offer a mortal life for that of a god? Odium demanded. No, Dalinar. If I win, I want the Knights Radiant. The forces of Alethkar and Yur-Ithiru will surrender to my fused, and your radiance will end this war. The other foolish kingdoms of men can keep fighting if they wish, but your people and mine will begin preparing for the true war, the one that will begin when the gods of other worlds discover the strength of surge binding. Your heirs will be bound to this as you are.
I cannot negotiate for people who are not yet born, Dalinar said. Nor can I promise my radiance will follow you as you cannot promise the fused will obey you. As I said, this must be between you and me. But if you win, I will agree to order my armies to stand down and stop the fighting. I will give up the war, and those who wish to join you will be allowed to do so.
Not good enough, Dalinar. Not nearly good enough.
Odium took a long, suffering breath. That light pulsed inside him, and Dalinar felt a kind of kinship to the ancient god then, sensing his fatigue, which somehow mirrored Dalinar's own.
I want so much more than Roshar, so much more than one planet, one people. But my people tire. I've worn them thin with this eternal battle. They seek endings, terrible endings. The entire war has changed based on what your wife has done. You realize this?
I do, Dalinar said.
It is time for a true accommodation, a true ending. Do you not agree?
Yes, I realize it. What do you propose? Odium waved dismissively at the contract Wit had drawn up.
No more talk of delays, of sending me away, of half-measures. We have a contest of champions on the 10th of next month, Odium said, at the 10th hour.
So soon? The month ends tomorrow.
Why delay? Odium asked. I know my champion. Do you know yours?
I do, Dalinar said.
Then let us stop dancing and commit. On the 10th our champions meet. If you win, I will withdraw to the kingdoms I currently hold, and I enforce an end to the war. I will even give up to you Alethkar and restore your homeland to you.
I must have Herdaz too.
What? Odium said. That meaningless little plot of land. What are they to you?
It's the matter of an oath, Odium, Dalinar said. You will restore to me Herdaz and Alethkar. Keep whatever other lands you've taken. They mostly followed you freely anyway. I can accept this, so long as you are still trapped on Roshar as honor wished.
I will, Odium said. Though I will be able to focus my attentions on sending agents to the rest of the Cosmere, using what I've conquered here as enough for me now. However, if I win the contest of champions,
I keep everything I've conquered, Herdaz and Alethkar included. And I want one other small thing. I want you, Dalinar.
My life, Odium? I intend to be my own champion. I'll have died if you win.
Yes, Odium said, eyes shining golden. You will have, and you will give your soul to me. You, Dalinar, will join the Fused. You will become immortal and will personally serve me, bound by your oaths. You will be the one I send to the stars to serve my interests in the Cosmere.
A cold shock ran through Dalinar, like he'd felt the first time he'd been stabbed. Surprise, disbelief, terror. You will join the Fused.
Are we agreed?
Odium said, his skin now glowing so brightly that his features were difficult to make out.
You have gotten from me more than I ever thought I would give up. Either way, the war ends, and you will have secured the safety of your allies, at the cost of gambling your own soul. How far does your honor extend, Blackthorn?
Dalinar wavered. Stopping now, with Aesir and Thelena safe, with a good portion of Roshar protected, and with a chance for more in Alethkar and Herdaz if he won, was truly more than he ever thought possible. A true end to the war. Yasna spoke of the need for councils, groups of leaders. She thought putting too much power in the hands of one individual was dangerous. He could finally see her point as he stood there on that field of golden light. This new deal would be good for his allies. They'd celebrate it, most likely. But he couldn't know for certain. He had to make a decision. Dared he do that? Dared he risk his own soul?
I have to contain him, Dalinar thought.
His people were celebrating their victory in Emul, but he knew, deep down, the enemy had given it away. He had preferred to secure his power elsewhere. The Mink had said it himself. If Odium had wanted to crush Aesir, he could have. Instead, he'd secured what he had. Odium knew that in controlling Yakaved, Alethkar, and Eri, he owned the strongest portion of Roshar. Without this deal, Dalinar saw years of fighting ahead. Decades. Against an enemy whose Fused were constantly reborn. From years spent defending Alethkar, he knew exactly how difficult it would be to retake. Dalinar saw his people dying by the thousands, unsuccessfully trying to seize lands he himself had fortified. Dalinar would lose this war in the long run. Honor had all but confirmed it. Renarin said victory, in a traditional sense, was nearly impossible as long as Odium drove his forces. And Taravangian, whom Dalinar didn't trust but did believe, had foreseen the same fact. The enemy would win, wearing them down over centuries if need be. Their best chance was for Dalinar's champion to defeat Odium's. If that champion failed, then Dalinar's only reasonable option would be to surrender anyway. He knew that, deep in his gut. Most importantly, this seemed his only real chance to free Alethkar. He had to do it. He hadn't achieved what he had through indecision. He either trusted his instincts and the promises of his god, or he had nothing. He took a deep breath.
Final terms are these. A contest of champions to the death. On the 10th day of the month, Pala, 10th hour. We each send a willing champion, allowed to meet at the top of Yirathiru, otherwise unharmed by either side's forces. If I win that contest, you will remain bound to the system, but you will return Alethkar and Herdaz to me, with all of their occupants intact.
You will vow to cease hostilities and maintain the peace, not working against my allies or our kingdoms in any way.
Agreed, Odium said. But if I win, I keep everything I've won, including your homeland. I still remain bound to this system and will still cease hostilities, as you said above. But I will have your soul to serve me, immortal. Will you do this? Because I agree to these terms.
And I, Dalinar whispered, I agree to these terms.
It is done.
113. Emotion.
And I will march proudly at the head of a human legion.
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days.
Disconnecting from the powers of the sibling left Navani feeling small. Was this really what life had been like before? Before she'd blended her essence with the siblings and gained awareness of the intricate motions of the thousands of fabrials that made up the siblings' physical form? She now felt so normal, almost. She retained a hint of awareness in the back of her mind, a sense for the veins of crystal that permeated the tower. If she rested her hand against a wall, she could sense its workings. Heat, pressure. Light. Life.
I swore I would never do this again, the sibling said in her mind. I swore I was done with humans.
Then it's good that Spren, like humans, can change their minds, Navani said. She was a little surprised to find her body as she remembered it, with a cut in her hava, blood-stained, where the knife had taken her.
Our bond is unusual, the sibling said. I still do not know what I think of what we've done. If we meant our words and keep them, does it matter?
What of Fabrials? The sibling asked. You did not promise to stop capturing Spren.
We will find a compromise, Navani said, picking her way out of the room with the crystal pillar. We will work together to find an acceptable path forward.
Will it be like your compromise with Raboniel, where you tricked her?
That was the best compromise she and I could come to, and we both knew it, Navani said. You and I can do better.
I wish to believe you, the sibling said, but as of yet, I do not. I am sorry.
Merely another problem to solve, Navani said, through application of logic and hope, in equal measure. She approached Raboniel's fallen body in the hallway, then knelt over it.
Thank you.
The eyes opened. Navani gasped.
Raboniel? You lived good.
One of her hands twitched. It seemed that Moash had cut her with his blade low enough that it hadn't burned out her eyes, though one arm and both legs were obviously dead. Navani raised her hand to her lips.
Do not weep, Raboniel whispered. I would have killed you to accomplish my goal.
Instead, you saved me.
Raboniel breathed in a shallow breath, but said nothing.
We'll meet again, Navani said. You will be reborn.
No, if I die, I will return. Mad, my soul is burned almost all the way. Do not, please, please.
What then, Navani said.
This new light works. My daughter is truly gone, so I made more
anti-void light. Where?
Raboniel rocked her head to the side, toward her desk, situated in the hallway near the opening to the crystal pillar room. Navani rose and searched through the drawers, finding a black sack containing a diamond filled with the precious, terrible light. She returned and affixed the diamond to the dagger, which was wet with Moash's blood. After cleaning it and reversing the metal strip, she knelt beside Raboniel. "Are you sure?" Navani asked. Raboniel nodded. Her hand twitched, and Navani reached over and held it, which made the fused relax.
"I have done what I wished. Odium is worried he may allow an ending."
"Thank you," Navani said softly.
"I never thought I would be sane at the end."
Navani raised the dagger, and for the first time she wondered if she was strong enough for this.
"I do wish," Raboniel said, "I could hear rhythms again."
"Then sing with me," Navani said, and began to sing Honor's tone. The fused smiled, then managed a weak hum to Odium's tone. Navani modulated her tone, lowering her voice, until the two snapped together in harmony one last time. Navani positioned the dagger above the wound in Raboniel's breast.
"End it, Navani," Raboniel whispered, letting the song cease. "Make sure they let it all end."
"I will," she whispered back, then, humming her best, holding the hand of a former immortal, Navani thrust the dagger in deep. Raboniel's nerves had mostly been severed, so she didn't spasm as her daughter had. Her eyes went a glassy marble white, and a breath escaped her lips, black smoke, as her insides burned away. Navani kept humming until the smoke dissipated.
"You have performed a kindness," the sibling said in her head.
"I feel awful."
"That is part of the kindness." "I am sorry," Navani said, "for discovering this light. It will let Spren be killed."
"It was coming to us," the sibling said. "Consequences once chased only humans. With the recreants, the consequences became ours as well. You have simply sealed that truth as eternal."
Navani pressed her forehead against Raboniel's, as the fused had done for her daughter. Then she rose, surrounded by exhaustion, Spren.
Storms. Without the tower light infusing her, her fatigue returned. How long had it been since she'd slept?
Too long.
But today, she needed to be a queen. She tucked the dagger away, it was too valuable to simply leave lying around, and took her copy of Rhythm of War under her arm. She left a note on Raboniel's corpse, just in case. "Do not dispose of this hero's body without first consulting the queen." Then she went to create order from the chaos of a tower suddenly set free.
Taravangian awoke late in the day. He barely remembered falling asleep. He barely could barely think. He was stupid, stupider than he'd ever been before. That made him weep. Stupid weeping. He cried and cried, overwhelmed by emotion and shame, Spren, a sense of failure, of anger at himself. He lay there until hunger drove him to stand. His thoughts were like creme, thick, slow. He stumbled down to the window where they had left his basket of food. Trembling, he clutched it, weeping at his hunger. It seemed so strong. And storms, he drew so many, Spren, when stupid. He sat beside his fake hearth and couldn't help wishing that Dalinar could be there with him. How grand that had been, to have a friend, a real friend, who understood him. He trembled at the idea, then began digging in the basket. He stopped as he found a note, written by Renarin Kolin, sealed by his signet. Taravangian sounded out each glyph. It took forever, drawing a fleet of concentration spren like ripples in the air, for him to figure out what it said. Two words. I'm sorry. Two gemstones, glowing brightly, were included with the note. What were these? I'm sorry. Why say that? What had the boy seen? He knew his future wasn't to be trusted. Other spren fled, and only fear spren attended him as he read those words. He needed to hide. He climbed off his chair and crawled to the corner. He quivered there until he felt too hungry. He crawled over and began eating the flatbread in the basket. Then some kind of purple Azish vegetable mash, which he ate with his fingers. It tasted so good. Had he ever eaten anything so wonderful? He cried over it. The gemstones continued to glow, large ones, with something moving in them. Hadn't he been told to watch for something like that? Thunder crackled in the sky and Taravangian looked up. Was that the Everstorm? No, it was a high storm. He hadn't realized it would come today. Thunder rattled the shutters and he dropped the bread. He hid again in the corner with globs of trembling fear spren. The thunder sounded angry.
He knows, Taravangian thought. The enemy knows what I've done.
No, wrong storm. He needed a way to summon Odium. Those gems, that was what they were for. It would happen today. Today he died. Today it ended. The door to his hut slammed open, broken at the hinges. Outside, guards scrambled away from a figure silhouetted against a darkening sky. The storm was almost here. And Zeth had come with it. Taravangian gasped, terrified, as this was not the death he had foreseen. He'd waited so long for a transcendent day when he would be supremely intelligent again. He'd never wondered about the opposite. A day when he was all emotion. A day when thoughts didn't move in his brain and spren swarmed him, feeding gluttonously upon his passions. Zeth stood quietly, his illusion gone, his bald head freshly shaved, reflecting the light of the spheres that had spilled from the basket.
How did you know?
The Shin finally asked.
And how long have you known?
Known? Taravangian forced out, crawling to the side through the fear spren.
My father, Zeth said.
Taravangian blinked. He could barely understand the words. He was so stupid. Emotions fought inside him. Terror. Relief that it would soon be over.
How did you know my father was dead? Zeth demanded, striding into the room. How did you know that Ishar reclaimed his sword? How?
Zeth no longer wore white. He'd changed to an Alethi uniform. Why?
Oh, disguise, yes.
He wore the terrible sword at his side. It was too big. The tip of the sheath dragged against the wooden floor. Taravangian hunched to the wall, trying to find the right words.
Zeth, the sword, you must...
I must do nothing, Zeth said, approaching steadily. I ignore you as I ignore the voices in the shadows. You know the voices, Taravangian, the ones you gave me.
Taravangian huddled down, closing his eyes, waiting, too overcome with emotion to do anything else.
What are these? Zeth said.
Taravangian opened his eyes. The gemstones. Zeth picked them up, frowning. He hadn't drawn that terrible sword.
Say something.
What should he say? Zeth couldn't harm those. Taravangian needed them.
Please, he cried, don't break them.
Zeth scowled, then threw them, one after the other, at the stone wall, shattering them. Strange Spren escaped, transparent windspren that trailed red light. They laughed, spinning around Zeth.
Please, Taravangian said through the tears, your sword. Odium, you...
Ever you manipulate me, Zeth interrupted, watching the windspren. Ever you seek to stain my hands with the blood of those you would kill. You brought all this upon you, Taravangian. The world would have been able to stand against the enemy if you hadn't made me murder half their monarchs.
No,
Taravangian said. He stood up with effort, scattering the spren around him, his heart thundering in his chest. His vision immediately began to swim. He'd stood up too quickly.
We killed to save the world.
Murders done to save lives, Zeth said softly, tracking Taravangian with eyes dark and shadowed from the room's poor light, now that the spheres were gone.
Idiocy.
But I wasn't ever to object. I was truthless. I simply followed orders. Tell me, do you think that absolves a man?
No,
Taravangian said, trembling with the weight of his guilt, shame spren bursting around him and floating as petals of rockbud blossoms to the ground.
A good answer. You are wise for one so stupid.
Taravangian tried to dash away past Zeth, but of course his legs gave out. He got tripped and collapsed in a heap. He groaned, his heart thumping, his vision swimming. A moment later, strong hands lifted him and slammed him back against the wall amid swarming exhaustion spren. Something snapped in Taravangian's shoulder, and pain spiked through his body. He drooped in Zeth's grip, breathing out in wheezes. The room started to grow golden.
All this time, Zeth said, I wanted to keep my honor. I tried so hard. You took advantage of that. You broke me, Taravangian.
Light. That golden light.
Zeth,
Taravangian said, feeling blood on his lips. Storms.
Zeth. He is here.
I decide now, Zeth said, reaching toward his waist, not for the terrible sword, but for the small knife he was wearing beside it.
I finally decide. Me. No one else compelling me. Taravangian, know that in killing you, I make it my choice.
Rumbling thunder, a brilliant, terrible golden light. Odium appeared. When he did, his face was distorted, his eyes shining with angry power. Thunder broke the landscape, and Zeth began to fade.
You should not tempt me today, Taravangian, Odium thundered. I have lost my champion again, and now I am bound by an agreement I do not want. How do they know how to move against me? Have you betrayed me, Taravangian? Have you been speaking to Ja'anut? What have you done?
The awe of that force, that transcendent power, left Taravangian quivering. Spren of a dozen varieties swirling around him, fighting for his attention. So many emotions. He barely noticed Zeth pulling the knife free, for he was so overwhelmed, awed, frightened, excited all at once. Fear won. Taravangian cried out, his shoulder afire with pain, his body broken. His plans had been silly. How had he thought to outthink a god when stupid? He couldn't do that when smart. No wonder he'd failed.
Did you fail? The sword is here. Odium is here.
Cold steel bit Taravangian's skin as Zeth stabbed him right in the chest. At the same moment, Taravangian felt something pushing through his fear, his pain. An emotion he'd never thought to feel himself. Bravery.
Bravery surged through him so powerfully he could not help but move. It was the dying courage of a man on the front lines charging an enemy army, the glory of a woman fighting for her child, the feeling of an old man on his last day of life stepping into darkness. Bravery. The physical realm faded as Odium pulled Teravangian into the place between worlds. Teravangian's body was not as weak here. This form was a manifestation of his mind and soul, and those were strong. The sword at Zeth's waist, that strange, terrible sword, manifested here in this realm where Odium brought Teravangian. The god looked down and saw the curling black darkness and seemed surprised. Teravangian seized the sword and pulled it free of its scabbard, hearing it scream for pleasure. He turned and thrust it upward, black smoke curling around his hands.
"Destroy!" the sword bellowed. "Destroy!"
Teravangian rammed it up into Odium's chest. The sword drank greedily of the god's essence, and as it did, Teravangian felt a snap. His body dying, Zeth finishing the job. He knew it immediately. Teravangian was dead. Anger rose in him like he had never known. Zeth had killed him. Odium screamed, and the golden place shattered, turning to darkness. The sword undulated in Teravangian's grip, pulling power from the god it had stabbed. The figure that contained Odium's power, the person who controlled it, evaporated, taken by the sword. That alone was so much investiture that Teravangian felt the sword grow dull in his fingers. Full. Lethargic. As when a hot brand was shoved into a barrel of water, there was an initial hiss. But this power was too vast for the sword to drink. It killed the person holding that power, however, which left a hole, a need, a vacuum. Like a gemstone suddenly without stormlight. It reached out, and Teravangian felt a distinct connection to it. Passion. Hatred. Today, Teravangian was only passion. Hatred, fear, anger, shame, awe. Bravery. The power loved these things, and it surged around him, enveloping him. His soul vibrated.
"Take me,"
the power pled, speaking not in words but in emotion.
"You are perfect. I am yours."
Teravangian hesitated briefly, then thrust his hands into the well of power and ascended to godhood, becoming Odium. 114. Broken Gods.
They should not be discarded, but helped to their potential, their final passions.
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days. Relaine walked with Venley and his new friends, Dull, Mazish, and the others Venley had recruited, to the Oath Gate, where Kaladin waited to transfer them to the Shattered Plains. Relaine felt in a stupor, despite a day having passed since his revelation, since speaking his first words as a truth watcher. The Spren had been watching him from the heart of a Kremling. Relaine and Venley had mistaken Tumi for a void Spren, but he wasn't exactly the same thing. Once an ordinary mist spren, Tumi had let Ja'anat touch him, and in so doing make him into something new, a spren of both honor and odium. Tumi pulsed to a new rhythm, the rhythm of war, something he had learned recently, something important for his siblings to hear.
"Renara knows," Relaine thought.
"He suggested you," Tumi said, "and our mother told about you. He was right. Our bond will be strong, and you will be wondrous. We are awed by you, Relaine, the Bridger of Minds. We are honored."
Honored,
That felt good, to be chosen because of what he'd done. Kaladin waited for them at the transfer room. He made the transfer with the Sill Blade. The air of the shattered plains was wetter and felt familiar to Relaine as they stepped onto a platform outside Narok. There they met with Leshwi and the other four fused, who, upon being transferred here earlier, had regained consciousness. Leshwi hovered over and tipped her head toward Kaladin in respect. "You could stay here at Narok," Kaladin said to her. "We'd welcome your aid."
"We fought against our own to preserve lives," Leshwi said. "We do not wish that to continue. We will find a third option outside this war, the path of the listeners."
"We'll find our way out here," Venli said to Confidence, "somehow."
"Well, go with honor then," Kaladin said, "and with the Queen's promise. If you change your minds, or if you and yours need refuge, we'll take you in." The Heavenly Ones took to the air, humming to praise. They began lowering the new listeners and their supplies down into the chasm for the hike eastward. With the high storm passed and with Fused to watch for chasm fiends from above, they should be able to make their way to the eastern flats where the other listeners had gone. Relaine gave Venli a hug and hummed to praise.
"I don't deserve any of this," she whispered to him. "I was weak, Relaine."
"Then start doing better," he told her, pulling back. "That is the path of radiance, Venli. We're both on it now. Write me via Spanreed once you find the others, and give my best to Thud and Harvo if they made it." She hummed to appreciation.
"You will come to us soon?"
"Soon," he promised, then watched her go. Kaladin stepped up beside Relaine and rested a hand on his shoulder. Relaine couldn't feel the plate, though it was apparently always there, invisible but ready when needed, like a shard blade, but made up of many spren. Kaladin didn't ask if Relaine wanted to leave with the others. Relaine had established that he needed to stay, at least until Renarin returned. Beyond that, well, there was something Relaine had started to fear. Something nebulous, but, once it occurred to him, persistent. If the humans had a chance to win this war, but at the expense of taking the minds of all the singers as they'd done in the past, would they take it? Would they enslave an entire people again, if given the opportunity? The thought disturbed him. He trusted Kaladin and his friends, but humankind? That was asking a lot. Someone needed to remain close in order to watch and be certain. He would visit the listeners, but he was a Radiant, and he was Bridge 4. Urethiru was his home. "Come on," Kaladin said. "It's time to go give Teft a proper send-off. Among friends." Taravangian's vision expanded, his mind expanded, his essence expanded. Time started to lose meaning. How long had he been like this? He became the power. With it, he began to understand the Cosmere on a fundamental level. He saw that his predecessor had been sliding toward oblivion for a long, long time. Weakened by his battles in the past, then deeply wounded by honor, this being had been enslaved by the power. Failing to claim Dalinar, then losing the tower and Stormblessed, had left the being frail, vulnerable. But the power was anything but frail. It was the power of life and death, of creation and destruction, the power of gods. In his specific case, the power of emotion, passion, and, most deeply, the power of raw, untamed fury, of hatred unbound. In this new role, Taravangian had two sides. On one was his knowledge, ideas, understandings, truths, lies. Thousands upon thousands of possible futures opened up to him. Millions of potentials. So numerous that even his expanded godly mind was daunted by their variety. On the other side was his fury. The terrible fury, like an unbridled storm, churned and burned within him. It, too, was so overwhelming he could barely control it. He was aware of what he'd left behind in the mortal realm. Zeth had long since climbed to his feet and sheathed Nightblood. Beside him, the assassin had found a burned-out corpse, mostly eaten by the sword's attack. That was Rhaes, Taravangian's predecessor, but Zeth wasn't able to tell. The sword had consumed clothing and most of the flesh, leaving bits of stone-gray bone. "They think that's me," Taravangian thought, reading the possible futures. "Zeth didn't see what happened to me spiritually. He doesn't know Odium was here." Almost all possible futures agreed. Zeth would confess that he'd gone to kill Taravangian, but somehow Taravangian had drawn Nightblood, and the weapon had consumed him. They thought him dead. He was free. Free to destroy, to burn, to wreak havoc and terror upon those who had doubted him. No, free to plan, to devise a way to save the world from itself. He could see so far, see so much. He needed to think, to burn, no, to plot, to. Taravangian was startled as he became aware of something else. A growing power nearby, visible only to one such as him. A godly power, infinite and burdened. He was not alone. They gave Teft a king's funeral, soul-casting him to stone. A sculptor would be commissioned to create a depiction of Fenderana to erect next to him. The sibling said there was a room, locked away, where the ancient radiance stood forever as stone sentries. It would feel good to see Teft among them, in uniform and looking at them all with a scowl despite the embalmer's best efforts. It felt right. All of Bridge Four came, except for Rock. Scar and Dre had relayed the news after returning to the Shattered Plains. It seemed Kaladin wouldn't be seeing Rock again. Together, the men and women of Bridge Four praised Teft, drank to him, and burned prayers for him in turn. Afterward, they sought a tavern to continue celebrating in a way Teft would have loved, even if he wouldn't have let himself participate. Kaladin waited as they drifted away. They kept checking on him, of course, worried for his health. Worried about the darkness. He appreciated each and every one of them for it, but he didn't need that type of help today. He was kind of all right. A good night's sleep and finding peace restored to the tower had helped. So he sat there, looking at the statue created from Teft's body. The others finally seemed to sense he needed to be alone, so they left him. Syl landed beside him, fully sized, in a Bridge Four uniform. He could faintly feel her when she rested her head on his shoulder.
"We won't stop missing him, will we?"
she asked softly.
"No. But that's all right. So long as we cling to the moments we had." "I can't believe you're taking this better than I am."
"I thought you said you were recovering."
"I am," she said. "This still hurts, though."
Once the tower had been restored, she'd mostly returned to herself. Some of what she'd felt had been gloom from what Raboniel had done. Some of it wasn't.
"We could ask Dalinar," Kaladin said, "if maybe there's something wrong with you, a bond or something unnatural." "He won't find one. I'm merely alive. And this is part of being alive. So I'm grateful, even if part of it stinks."
He nodded.
"Really stinks," she added.
Then, for good measure,
stinks like a human after... How long has it been since you had a bath?
He smiled, and the two of them remained there, looking up at Taft. Kaladin didn't know if he believed in the Almighty, or in the Tranquiline Halls, or whether people lived after they died. Yes, he'd seen something in a vision, but Dalinar had seen many dead people in his visions, and that didn't mean they still lived somewhere. He didn't know why Tien had given the wooden horse to him, as if to prove the vision was real, only for it to immediately vanish. That seemed to indicate Kaladin's mind had fabricated the meeting. He didn't let it prevent him from feeling that he'd accomplished something important. He'd laid down a heavy burden. The pain didn't go away, but most of the shame, that he let fall behind him. Eventually, he stood up and embraced Teft's statue. Then he wiped his eyes and nodded to Syl. They needed to keep moving forward, and that involved deciding what he was going to do with himself, now that the crisis had ended. Taravangian grew more capable by the moment. The power molded him as he bridled it. He stepped to the edge of infinity, studying endless possibilities as if they were a million rising suns and he were standing on the bank of an eternal ocean. It was beautiful. A woman stepped up beside him. He recognized her full hair, black and tightly curled, along with her vibrant round face and dark skin. She had another shape as well, many of them, but one deeper and truer than the others.
"Do you understand now?" she asked him.
"You needed someone who could tempt the power," Taravangian said, his light gleaming like gold, "but also someone who could control it. I asked for the capacity to save the world. I thought it was the intelligence, but later wondered if it was the ability to feel. In the end, it was both. You were preparing me for this."
"Odium's power is the most dangerous of the 16, she said. "It ruled Rays, driving him to destroy. It will rule you too, if you let it."
"They showed you this possibility, I assume," Taravangian said, looking at infinity. "But this isn't nearly as... certain as I imagined it. It shows you things that can happen, but not the hearts of those who act. How did you dare try something like this? How did you know I'd be up to the challenge?"
"I didn't," she said. "I couldn't. You were heading this direction. All I could do was hope that if you succeeded, my gift would work. That I had changed you into someone who could bear this power with honor."
Such power. Such incredible power. Taravangian peered into infinity. He'd wanted to save his city and had succeeded. After that, he'd wanted to save Roshar. He could do that now. He could end this war. Storms, Dalinar and Odium's contract, which bound Taravangian just as soundly, would do that already. But beyond that, what of the entire Cosmere? He couldn't see that far yet. Perhaps he would eventually be able to. But he did know his predecessor's plans and had access to some of his knowledge. So Taravangian knew the Cosmere was in chaos, ruled by fools, presided over by broken gods. There was so much to do. He sorted through Odium's previous plans and saw all their flaws. How had he let himself be maneuvered into this particular deal with Dalinar? How had he let himself rely so much upon a contest of champions? Didn't he know? The way to win was to make sure that, no matter the outcome, you were satisfied. Odium should never have entered a deal he could not absolutely control.
"It can still be done,"
Terebangian realized, seeing the possibilities so subtle that his predecessor had missed. Yes, Dalinar has set himself up to fail. I can beat him.
Terebangian,
Cultivation said, holding her hand out to him.
Come, let me teach you about what you've been given. I realize the power is overwhelming, but you can control it. You can do better than Ray's ever did.
He smiled and took her hand. Inside, he exulted.
Oh, you wonderful creature, he thought. You have no idea what you have done.
He was finally free of the frailties of his body and position that had always controlled and defined him. He finally had the freedom to do what he desired. And now, Terebangian was going to save them all.
115. Testament.
Yes. I look forward to ruling the humans.
Musings of El on the first of the final 10 days.
Shallan sat by candlelight, writing quietly in her notebook. Adolin pulled his chair up beside her. She looks better, he said, than she did when I saw her in the market. But I don't know, Shallan. Shallan put down the pen, then took his hands, glancing to the side, where, in their little chamber in lasting integrity, her first spren sat on a chair, Pattern standing beside her and humming. Had the limp fibers of her head Pattern straightened? In talking with Pattern, they decided upon an Alethi name for Shallan's previous cryptic, one that fit, best they could tell, with the meaning of her individual Pattern. Testament does seem better, Adolin, Shallan said. Thank you for speaking with her. Maya sat on the floor, cross-legged, in a kind of warrior's pose. She hadn't recovered completely, but she was improved. And though she still didn't say much, Shallan doubted many beings, human or spren, had ever spoken words quite so valuable as Maya had at the trial. One might say, by simple economics, that Maya was one of the best orators who ever existed. If you aren't going to say much, then you might as well make what you do say mean something. It gave them hope that whatever Shallan had done to Testament could also be repaired. I'll try to explain everything Maya and I have done, Adolin said, as honor spren bells rang somewhere near. But the truth is, I don't think either of us know, and I'm not exactly an expert on all this. Recent events considered? I think you're the only expert. Shallan reached up and cupped his face. Thank you, Adolin. For? Being you. I'm sorry for the secrets. You did tell me, he said. Eventually. He nodded toward the knife with the gemstone, still unused, which rested beside her open notebook on one side of the table. The cube Marais had sent rested on the other side. The bells are ringing. Time? She removed her hand and situated herself at the desk. Adolin fell silent, waiting and watching as Shallan lifted the top of Marais's cube. With help from Kalek, they'd gotten it open without harming the thing inside. A spren, in the shape of a glowing ball of light, a strange symbol at the center. No one here recognized the variety of spren, but Wit called it a Sion. Are you well, Ale? Shallan asked. It was said like, A-le. Yes, the spren whispered. You can come out of the cube. You don't need to live in there anymore. I'm supposed to stay. I'm not supposed to talk to you, to anyone. Shallan glanced at Adolin. The odd Spren resisted attempts to get it free. It acted like an abused child. Another in the list of Moraes' crimes, Radiant thought. Agreed, Shallan replied. Radiant remained. They agreed that once they found the right path, she would eventually be absorbed as Vale had been. For now, Shallan's wounds were still fresh, practically bleeding. But what she'd done would finally let her begin to heal. And she knew why Pattern had always been so certain she would kill him, and why he'd acted like a newly bonded Spren when she'd begun noticing him on the ship with Jasnah. The simple answer was the true one. He had been newly bonded. And Shallan had not one shard blade, but two. She still had questions. Things about her past didn't completely align yet, though her memory was no longer full of holes. There was much they didn't understand. For example, she was certain that during the years between killing Testament and finding Pattern, her powers had still functioned in some small ways. Some of this, Kallek said, had to do with the nature of Deadeyes. Before the Recreants, they had never existed. Kallek said he thought this was why Moraes was hunting him. Something to do with the fall of the Singers and the Knights Radiant so long ago, and the imprisoning of a specific Spren. Contact Moraes, please, Spren, she whispered to the ball of light. It is time. The ball floated into the air, and the next part took barely a moment. The globe of light shifted to make a version of his face speaking to her. Little knife, the face said in Moraes' voice. I trust the deed has been done? I did it, Shallan said. It hurts so much. But she is gone. Excellent. That she, little knife? Vale and I are one now, Moraes, Shallan said, resting her hand on her notebook, which contained the fascinating things Kallek had told her about other worlds, other planets, places he desperately wished to see. Like the other heralds, Kallek wasn't entirely stable. He was unable to commit to ideas or plans. However, to one thing, he had committed. He wanted off Roshar. He was convinced that Odium would soon take over the world completely and restart torturing all the heralds. Kallek would do practically anything to escape that fate. There was a long pause from Moraes. Shallan, he finally said, we do not move against other ghost bloods. I'm not one of the ghost bloods, Shallan said. None of us ever were, not fully. And now we are stepping away. Don't do this. Think of the cost. My brothers? Is that what you're referencing? You must know by now that they are no longer in the tower, Moraes. Pattern and Wit got them out before the occupation even occurred. Thank you for this, Sion, by the way. Wit says that unbound ones are difficult to come by, but they make for extremely handy communication across realms. You will never have your answers, Shallan. I have what I need, thank you very much, she said, as Adolin put a comforting hand on hers. I've been speaking to Kallek, the herald. He seems to think the reason you're hunting him is because of an unmaid. Ba-Edo Mishram? The one who connected to the Singers long ago, giving them forms of power? The one who, when trapped, stole the Singers' minds and made them into parchment? Why do you want the gemstone that holds Ba-Edo Mishram, Moraes? What are you intending to do with it? What power do the ghost bloods seek with a thing that can bind the minds of an entire people? Moraes didn't respond. The Sion, imitating his face, hovered in place, expressionless. I'll be returning to the tower soon, Shallan said, along with those honor Spren who have decided, in light of recent revelations, to bond with humans. When I do, I expect to find you and yours gone,
Perhaps if you cover yourself well, I won't be able to track you down. Either way, I am going to find that gemstone before you do. And if you get in my way, well, it will be a fun hunt, wouldn't you say?
This will not end well for you, Shallan, Moraes said. You make an enemy of the most powerful organization in all the Cosmere.
I think we can handle you.
Perhaps. Can you handle my master? Can you handle her master?
Thydakar? Shallan guessed.
Ah, so you've heard of him.
The Lord of Scars, Wit calls him. Well, when you next meet this Lord of Scars, give him a message from me.
He comes here in Avatar only, Moraes said. We are too far beneath his level to be worthy of more.
Then tell his Avatar something for me. Tell him, we're done with his meddling. His influence over my people is finished. She hesitated, then sighed. Wit had asked nicely. Also, Wit says to tell him, deal with your own stupid planet, you idiot. Don't make me come over there and slap you around again.
So it must be.